Good morning, this is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. Mr. John McKay, how you doing over there?
Well, earlier this week, I think they're called clouds, and those were raindrops.
Are you're talking about Monday night? Yeah, I think I remember because we were going to go to dinner somewhere and sit on the patio, and that did not happen.
When was the last time you heard somebody say, "Oh, we can't, it's raining"?
It did produce a rainbow, so I saw some amazing pictures on Facebook about
that. And now the heat has come back.
Yep, and it's back, and with that, the heat of the Tri-Cities market has come back, and we survived boat race weekend, and so that was exciting to have a little bit of normalcy there before, you know, potentially things go off the rails again. No, I shouldn't say that. I was maybe commenting on certain press conferences that happened this week, but we will see. This is a real estate show. We will keep it between the lines with the real estate show. And on that note, I will go with some real estate stories. Mm-hmm. We always like to start off with our crazy national celebrity story. This one a little bit different, but I found it very, very interesting. So USC, University of Southern California,
yes,
sold their presidential mansion for $25 million to a billionaire investor, Mr. Chen, who was originally made his money in the online gaming industry. But it was interesting. I was like, why would USC? You rarely see a university sell off an asset like that.
Yeah.
So this is the very first time that that property has sold. It was built in 1934. It's known as the Seeley Mudd Estate. So what it was it was donated to the university by the dean of the medical center at USC. Every president of USC since 1979 has lived there during the tenure of their university.
Huh.
However, Carol Folt is USC's new president. She took office in July 2019, and she implemented a ton of changes along with a sustainability push and different staff appointments. One of the things that she notated was that the maintenance upkeep cost of the presidential mansion didn't make sense. Now, mind you, they replaced it with an $8.6 million contemporary house in Santa Monica. But I guess it was done for reasons that made financial sense, which is drastically less. But you had this beautiful estate where they would have these fundraising events and stuff. And,
yeah.
It was just, I think it is a changing of the guard, per se, in that instance. But picked up full price, put on the market at $24.5 million, sold for $25.5 million over.
Wow.
Asking. And the buyer owns a number of estates in California, multiple properties also in New York. So the Chins have a fondness for historic mansions,
yes,
we shall say, and obviously the pocketbook to get it done.
Wow.
On a more realistic note, nationally, looking at some news about new home sales. So we have seen just record-breaking months after months, and we were always asking on the show, when's this going to end? When's it going to change? How long can prices go up? So, interestingly enough, June's new home sales numbers came in at what they call a seasonally adjusted rate of $676,000 per year, which is down significantly from January's numbers, which was $993,000. So the numbers are now below their pre-COVID-19 run, and nationally, inventory is jumping. So it bottomed out at 3.5 months of inventory last October. And it's now back to a historically normal 6.3 months. What is this telling us? Well, I'll tell you what it's telling us is builders are pulling back in the faces of high prices. You know, material costs going up. Mm-hmm. What can the public bear? You know, we obviously got to that point where the graph changed and made a change. And so we found that saturation that the market was willing to bear and starting to see the numbers change slightly. Now, as we always talk about, real estate's a very local game, not exactly the case yet here in Tri-Cities, but we are seeing indications of some relief in those situations. Nothing like the national numbers, but we've been following some of those trends nationally, more so in the recent years than we have in the past. So I think we'll see some trickle-down effect of that coming into play. Looking at all of that, we always like to take what we are seeing in the market and bring that to the radio show each week. And I will tell you, this week will be an interesting topic. We as realtors sign up when you are a realtor. And one of the things that made me think about this is there's some national radio ads out there about using a realtor. There's some TV ads.
I've seen those.
You've heard them on the radio. Yeah. You've seen them on TV, and you're like, what does that mean? And so I saw...
Well, that's to counter the do-it-yourself effect, isn't it?
A little bit, and also to counter what there... You can be a licensed broker, but not a realtor. And what's the difference there that happens... And the big difference is what we become subject to a national code of ethics.
Yeah.
And so I thought, okay, that 30-minute commercial doesn't even begin to explain what happens. I also saw a few things in our industry that, shall I say, made me raise my eyebrows a little bit over the course of the last week and thought maybe this would be a little reminder of what that means and why that happens. So... To give a little background, I got to go backwards a little bit to talk about that and how this came about, how the National Association of Realtors came about, how the Realtor designation came about, and the Code of Ethics. And it goes all the way back to like 1907. And you look at what was happening 1907, 1908, and really up to that time, people and where they lived were really concentrated in cities. With the people, a lot of rentals, not a lot of people owning their own homes. Mm-hmm. But right around that time, you have Henry Ford and the Model T coming up.
Yes.
And what did that do is that allowed people to now live on the other side of town, but commute into work or get out to different properties. So it started to open up the countryside a little bit. And with, you know, with massive things like gold rushes and property rushes that happen, back then, especially, there was no internet, there was no Yelp, there was no reviewing people.
No.
So what you had happen was a lot of people, and they called them curbstone brokers, where somebody would just show up on the corner of the curb and start selling land deeds for these wonderful pieces of property. And so the curbstone brokers were very, very fraudulent. There was massive misrepresentation. Selling land without title, selling the same deed multiple times with forgeries, doing interest-only loans with balloon payments. This really was the era of the phony subdivisions, fake subdivisions. And so as this started to happen, a group of, you know, responsible business people got together. They got together in 1907, 13 boards met of real people that were involved in real estate. There was no licensing at that time. Mm-hmm. Anybody could say they were involved in that industry. And so they originally met in Duluth, Minnesota. And the founder had this amazing quote. As I was researching for the show today, I had this amazing quote that said, "There is something about the permanency and stability of land which should give like traits of character to the real estate man." And I loved that. And I thought, gosh, okay, so these guys got together and said, hey, this is a big thing. They knew back then in 1907, ownership in the land, dealing fairly and honestly with people was going to be a big thing. But they had to come to an agreement on what that was going to look like. And basically, prior to that point, there was basically a mantra, and the mantra was, let the public beware. And that was like, gosh, you really had to kind of like research things yourself and make sure. And this group of gentlemen wanted to change that mantra to let the public be served. And so I thought that was really cool to kind of look at that and see. But it took them 5 years from that point because, you know, we didn't have Twitter. We didn't have Facebook. You couldn't just, you know, meet up with your fellow agents in a, you know, online and talk about it, or even call them on a cell phone for that matter. So
a telegraph Zoom meeting,
telegraph letters. It took 5 years for them to adopt the very first code of ethics in 1913, which really became the foundation of what we have as the code of ethics that when you become a realtor that you abide by. Now, it's been changed many times over the years, like over 30 times it's been changed. It had to be updated. You know, even in my career, it's been updated, especially as we've gone from non-internet sales to internet sales, where you can advertise, what you have to notate when you do your advertising. So one of the things I wanted to look at that people might not understand is, and how this happens, is what does it mean as an association to abide by that code of ethics? And I think a lot of people in the general public don't realize that that's what makes a realtor different. And so some of the things that I wanted to go over was just a few of the basic articles and what that means in your everyday dealing with realtors that you come in contact with. So Article 1, the very first article of the code, says that when you represent a buyer, seller, landlord, or tenant, or other client as their agent, realtors pledge themselves to protect and promote the interests of their client. This obligation to the client is primary, but it does not relieve realtors of their obligation to treat all parties honestly.
Ooh.
So there's conflicts that can come up with this that you have to be aware of. And so one of the biggest conflicts that we see all the time, and in this market, it is a very, very interesting discussion, is one of the way you can violate that code of ethics is by misleading a seller on the market value of the property. Say you're going to get their listing to list the house for sale. But if you deliberately mislead the owner as to the market value, the house is worth $300,000, but you know there's going to be 10 agents competing for that business, and you want to promote yourself as the best agent for the business. One of the bad ways that you could do that violates the code of ethics is you could say, hey, you know, your property's actually worth $320,000. Mm. I don't know what all these other guys are talking about. You know, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you might take that listing grossly overpriced with the thought that, oh, they'll just come down in price later and then I'll have the listing in the business and then I'll sell it when they become realistic. You could actually be violating the code of ethics.
Ooh,
there.
Yeah.
And so it's that piece of presenting accurate market information. And we have a higher standard of care when it comes to that. The other thing that happens and is scary in this market, and we talk about this all the time, and another reason why I brought it up, is you as an agent have to present all offers until closing. And I know we've talked about this on the show before, but say you have a $300,000 house and you immediately get it under contract for $300,000 and you're clicking along and things are going great. And Lance, you know, another agent has it, and Lance comes along and says, hey, I've got a client. We're going to write $280,000, and we write down an offer, and I call the other agent, say, I'm going to email you over an offer for $280,000, and we want to be in backup position. We don't think that $300,000 is going to appraise, and we'd like to be in backup position at $280,000, and you email that over to the other agent. The other agent's like, oh, hey, I got your offer. But I mean, come on, dude, we're in at $300,000. You're crazy. Well, we might be, but if you could please let the seller know. Okay, great, thanks. You never hear back from that other agent.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just so happen to know the sellers of the $300,000 house, and then you see them at Yoke's when you're grocery shopping on Sunday. And a couple weeks later, and you say, hey, how's it going? Oh, well, it's going okay, but we didn't sell our $300,000 house. And you're like, oh man, gosh, that's crazy. We had that backup offer for $280,000,
and they're looking at you like,
and they look
what?
And they're like, what are you talking about? And so you're like, oh, well, we had put in a backup offer to, never saw it. Massive licensing violation for that other agent, right? Like, just because it wasn't in the realm of what they had accepted, just because he thought it wouldn't get through. Agents don't get to make that decision. All offers have to be presented to the clients. Mm-hmm. And when you have 20 offers, clients have to be presented all 20 offers. And so there's a lot of rules and regulations that go along with that. But you have to, if it comes in writing, a justifiable offer presented to another agent, that has to be presented to the clients.
Wow.
The third thing that you really have to be careful about is not divulging confidential information about your clients.
Mm.
Like, for instance, potentially their motivation for selling. If they don't want the public to know that, they've told you that in confidence, for instance, maybe they're getting ready to file bankruptcy. Maybe they're in financial trouble. Maybe there's a divorce pending. And that is confidential information that they do not want out there. Then you cannot divulge that information to other parties that are out there. Now, disclosures regarding the property or the neighborhood, those are not confidential.
Yeah.
But information about the client can be. So agents have to be careful that they are doing that so that they do not violate the code of ethics. Now, here's a big one in today's market, that agents, I've seen agents do sometimes without knowing they're doing it, but violating the code of ethics is not disclosing the existence of other offers. Okay, so offers themselves are not necessarily confidential, but not disclosing that there's other offers, when an agent asks, particularly, could violate the realtor code of ethics. And then even more importantly, mm-hmm. is if a realtor is asked directly, do you or your firm represent any of the other offers? They have to answer honestly in that situation.
Ooh.
So a lot of times you'll see situations where maybe the agents didn't ask the right questions. Maybe they didn't inquire enough about what's happening. But your agent has to work within that code of ethics to support our industry and our organization, and they have signed up to do that by being a realtor. But we see things get messy out there, and I see newer agents and sometimes even worse, experienced agents get on the wrong side of this border.
Ooh.
And so we have mechanisms in place. We have a great local board. They have committees that police this, and there's processes you can go through, and penalties that are involved to help maintain and enforce that. And you do not want to become involved in one of those situations for
yeah.
sure. But the public sometimes doesn't always understand what that means and what we have signed up to uphold. So mm-hmm. when I come back from the break, we talked a little bit about the dealing honesty part of the code of ethics. When I come back from the break, I'm going to talk about cooperating with
Ooh.
Other agents and what that means for realtors within the context of their code of ethics.
Right here on News Talk.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. Hopefully the mics weren't on during the break. John McKay and I getting a little crazy back here in the studio. So,
yep.
Having a great time. The real estate market is still absolutely exploding around here in the Tri-Cities. But with that comes a little bit of a gold rush and some reminders about how we should act in that situation. And so I dug out the Realtor Code of Ethics, and a lot of people don't know what that is. And I'm sometimes I think sometimes agents don't know what that is.
Well, I would imagine in a compressed, hot, highly competitive, pressure-filled market,
you see
more. Yeah, because people are doing anything and everything they can to get the listings and to make money.
So you absolutely nailed it. And this next point that I bring up is basically a result of this type of market. So Article 3 of the Realtor Code of Ethics talks about cooperating with other brokers. And it said, realtors shall cooperate with other brokers except when the cooperation is not in the client's best interest.
Mm.
But the obligation to cooperate does not include the obligation to share commissions, fees, or to otherwise compensate another broker. So here's some violations, though, that happen in this market. And that is making your compensation part of the purchased contract.
Ooh.
So for instance, what happens a lot of times is that purchase contract is an agreement between a buyer and a seller.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of the what a agent gets paid now, that is an agreement between the seller and their listing agent. And then the listing agent makes a statement or an offer of cooperating to the realtor public.
Okay.
And says, hey, come show this house. And when you do, I will share, you know, X percent of my commission with you. Well, what happens is, let's say it's very competitive and you get five offers, and you've got one buyer's agent. You represent the seller, and you've got one buyer's agent that says, "Man, I'll do anything. I'll do anything for my client to get this house. We've written seven offers. I just want him to get it. I don't even care about anything else." And the listing broker says, "Well, let's see if you don't care about anything else." And they send a counteroffer and says, "Well, your buyer can have the property, but instead of X commission, you agree to reduce your commission to Y."
Mm.
Well, that would be a violation of the code of ethics, because that realtor's just unilaterally decided to change their offer that they put out there. Now, it very, very different than the buyer agent making that suggestion themselves. Sometimes we'll see an offer where a buyer's agent will be like, "Hey, this is my third cousin and he really helped me out once. So instead of getting paid X percentage, I'll take Y." The buyer agent can make that choice themselves. The listing agent forcing that argument then changes the ball game dramatically and could be a violation of the code of ethics.
Wow.
So that's a big one. This is another one, and I ran into this week, and this comes up in a busy market. Like, John, you nailed it where you said, I bet this market causes issues with this type of situation. And that is the third one that I had down here, was not disclosing to another broker if there's an accepted offer and if there are any unresolved contingencies. So if they ask you, "Hey, what are the contingencies that we're still looking at?" you have to tell them. And the other part of this is, once a property goes pending, you have an accepted purchase and sale agreement, you have to change that to pending in our MLS system to alert the other agents that it's pending, because there's nothing worse than having somebody show up and then they're like, "Oh, hey, sorry, it's not really available. You know, we forgot to let you guys know that there was an offer put in on it." So that is a big one that we see happening in the market. The other thing too is just for one, in that situation, following the rules of what the seller has dictated for showings. Mm. And you'd think this is a no-brainer and you wouldn't have to say anything, but we are in a weird time. And we've got a lot of things that change. We've got, you know, we've got potential masking rules changing all the time. We also have the sellers might have their own requirements for people coming into their home.
We only want people between the hours of 6 and 8 p.m.
Correct. And then you show up at 5:30 and ask to get in. Well, you're violating the realtor code of ethics there. It was clearly put in those remarks. You came outside of that time frame. So this is a violation, the type of violation that we see. Or, you know, people want you to wear booties in the house, or they want you to wear your mask while you're in the house, and then people show up and they don't. Okay. Ooh. So, or the agent doesn't. Worse, the agent doesn't. And so we see different iterations of this, but not following the directions that people have put in there. The last thing that I'm going to kind of wrap up with, because there's so many points in the code of ethics, but I'm just kind of hitting the big one. And that is what we call clear agreements. And in real estate, a binding contract is a written down clear agreement. What it is not is a verbal agreement. That is not 3 days from closing, somebody calling and saying, hey, I know we're closing on Thursday, but the seller would really like to stay there Friday. Is that going to be okay? And then a buyer and agent is like, yeah, sure, no problem. We'll just see you Friday night. Okay, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Okay, this is not just a verbal throw it out there handshake. Those types of things have to be documented and in writing. And the realtors involved in that situation, they have an obligation to make sure that that happens. Ooh. So just remember, yes, when we're dealing in the real estate transactions, getting what you think is the situation down in writing, that is likely what you are going to get and should be getting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a lot that goes into that. I have gotten through 1/10 of what yeah. could potentially be in there. I tried to hit the big points today. We just like people to know what they're dealing with, and that a lot of times people will ask us to do something that will violate that code of ethics. And we have to say to the public and say, I can't do that. You know, that is not something that our industry allows. If another agent has a listing, for instance, I didn't even talk about this. They have an exclusive relationship with that client. That's not somebody that I call on. I don't try to get that listing away from them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't try to, you know, solicit them to switch from their agent to our yeah. firm. Now, if they are going to finish a contract with somebody else and then interview new people and they call us, no problem. That doesn't violate the code of ethics at all. But we're not going out there knocking on the door saying, hey, I know you've been working with ABC Realty, but I represent XYZ Realty, and we're way better. You should switch now. Cancel your contract. No.
That's you know, not
that,
legal.
That is not, does not follow the real estate code of ethics. All right, that's what I got for what's going on in a hot market and to be looking out for. Real quick, I had a pick three, but I just have a pick two.
I noticed the big X through the one.
I put a big X and I put sold because one of my pick threes sold in the last couple hours. And like we talked about not disclosing if a property sold in the code of ethics.
You disclosed it.
It sold. So I'm not even going to talk about it. But my pick two, real quick, 5700 Laurel Drive. I'm just going to give you the highlights. 2.5 acres, 5-bedroom, 3-bath, 3,100 square feet in Ooh. West Rich. I mean, that's a massive property.
That's
tons
big.
Of square footage on 2.5 acres. Absolutely beautiful property. And that's coming in priced at $679,000.
Mm.
And then pick number two that I had, 9377 West 9th in Kennewick. This is a 3-bedroom, 2-bath Rambler. In Bridgewater Estates, so newer, Hayden built, mm-hmm. 1152 square feet, great room concept, vaulted ceilings. Folks, this is that price point that's hard to find. 3-bedroom, 2-bath, Rambler, amazing Kennewick location, $340,000.
Wow.
So there's some great property out there. We have some great late summer inventory coming on. If you've been out of the market in the past and you want to jump back in before rates start going up and things change, go to kenmoreteam.com, shoot us a message, and we would love to help. And we will be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.